Women's Shir, Shar HaBechina, Chavis HaLodus, the Sunday Shir, we can call it.
Why don't you record the Wednesday Shir?
I started in Shar Yichud HaMaisa.
Oh,
I didn't do
okay.
It previously, but Shar Yichud HaMaisa I recorded.
Oh, terrific.
I don't know how it's put up. Someone's in charge of putting it up on the website.
Uh-huh.
It's
hard to follow with it. It's hard if it doesn't have dates.
The first few seconds always say what day it is. I always say what day it is.
You have to go into a different one to
yeah.
See the day. But there's stuff there.
Anyway, so we're in Shar HaBechina, and he's talking about a human being. He says that's the most... that's what's closest to us, that's what will speak to us the most, even though there are seven disciplines that we're supposed to study and learn about and see the Chochmah of Hashem, the wisdom of Hashem, the complexity, etc. And he talked about a person, and he talked about life, the creation of life, and the stages he went through, inorganic, organic, life, food, life, animals, people, neshama. And each one's amazing. And then he gets into the biology of a person. And, you know, again, the Chavis HaLodes lived over 1,000 years ago. And he talks about it's unbelievable how life is created. And it's unbelievable how it's sustained as a fetus for 9 months, by a person. And then it's born. And that's unbelievable, because how does it get out of such a tight spot? And then all the miracles that occur, and then who's doing all these things? And everything is just so, and like clockwork, and what's open shuts, and what shuts opens, and as the child grows inside the mother's womb, it gets more sustenance, and who's turning up the controls? So this is very, very typical. This is quintessential Bechina. That's what he wants you to do. He wants you to study these things, think about them, marvel at them, and be aware of Hashem's presence, really. This morning I was talking to a husband whose wife is about to meet Hashem. Yeah. She's not from the neighborhood, really. She's not from the shul. But she's here now, and she's petrified. It's her third child.
Why?
And she's petrified. Mashu, okay, Akasha for Maisa, she is. So I told him she should come to today's class, and she'll hear how Hashem is standing next to her because of all these literal miracles taking place when a child's born. I mean, the contractions, the labor, I mean, it's a miracle. This is how the... It's time, and the body is now, the fetus is now grown to its optimal growth, and now it's the time to be born and start to function on its own as an independent neshama, as an independent guf, as an independent person, and so to speak independent, right? It maintains its dependency for quite a few years, although in different forms than when it's a fetus. So I said, come here, she'll feel that Hashem is standing next to her. And then she won't be petrified. But she's not here.
Yeah, the sad part is that I'm thinking all these nisim that occur, we're so focused during the process of labor that you don't think about the niflos habore until afterward.
Right, you think about all the pain.
There's pain.
That's why you have to come to these classes.
Too late.
No one.
Yeah, we're we have time to come after the kids are grown.
No, so that's why you have to study these things. You know, it's too late because we discovered Shar HaBechina too late. That's not his fault. He wants men to learn it. He wants women to learn it. It's a marvel. And it cements our awareness of Hashem, and it just shows. And again, he was not at all privy to what we know now. He was, you would call the Chavis HaLodes clueless. He had no idea what we know now. The Sefer would be 100, you know, he wrote a few words. Everything, I printed out a few papers, which I'll read to you. Just the every step is a miracle. He didn't know all these steps. He just writes a few words. He writes how the baby is conceived, how the baby survives for 9 months, how the baby is born, and all the things that have to happen when the baby is born. So what he knew, you know, what did he know? He knew rudimentary things. But what we know now is only much more focused, that there's a Hashem in the world and Hashem is running everything and everything is just so. So I don't think we're going to learn any Chavis Lavavis today. I printed out things that I'm going to read from. And the beginning is a lot, but I'm not going to read the beginning. What I have, I'm talking about. Bear with me for 2 or 3 minutes. It might be a little boring and technical. It's a description of, you know, again, the Chavis Lavavis says life. Where did it come from? And it describes here the sperm fertilizing the ovum, and there's such words here, like I don't even know what it means, and a zygote, and the first sperm that penetrates fully into the egg donates its genetic material. Like, it's all talked about like there's no Hashem in the world.
Where are you reading this from?
I just kept downloading until I saw something that I could say over, because what I downloaded is a Tipa Shebiyam. There's so much material out there, and I tried to print out just what was very, very focused and the most concise, and that's like too much.
Does he address issues like infertility or handicapped children? I mean,
that is. Does the Chavis Lavavis deal with that?
He deals with that.
In other places in the Sefer, when things happen in life that we don't understand why Hashem's doing it. Here he wants us to look at the 99 out of 100 times that it works right. Mm-hmm. He will talk about childhood diseases.
In this section? In Shabbat?
What?
He'll talk about that.
Childhood diseases.
Yeah, in Shabbat.
No, he won't talk about why bad things happen to people in Shaar HaBechina. That's not what Shaar HaBechina is about. Right. He talks about it in Shaar HaBitachon. He talks about it in Shaar HaVodos HaLokim. He talks about it in Shaar Cheshbon HaNefesh. And he explains it, you know, this is something Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to know and wasn't fully happy with the answer that he got. But we have here, he wants you to focus on, you know, when someone has a stroke, Chas V'Shalom, it just wakes us up to marvel at how complex the body is and how many things have to go right in order for the body to work. And they go right basically, virtually all of the time, mamish, for billions of people every day, every minute. You know, the body responds to electric commands from the brain. How did that happen? Who built that machine? So when it doesn't work, so we say, oh, look, I never even thought about that. My mind is telling the muscle to move. Because all of a sudden my mind's saying to the muscle to move, and it's not moving. Well, it's disconnected. Like someone's electricity went out over Shabbos. So they said, wow, I never thought about, like, there's always electricity coming into my house, and it's working, and it's making my refrigerator work, and it's making my lights work, and it's making my air conditioner work. And then if you would start thinking about how electricity is produced and how it got to your house, I'm not even talking about Shaar HaBechina stuff, going back to the forces in the universe that allow electricity to be harnessed. I'm just talking about, let's say, a secular person would just say, wow, how does a company hundreds of miles away make my refrigerator work? Because all of a sudden it doesn't work, right? So then something broke. He does talk about childhood diseases as he goes through a person's life, because he'll talk about the fetus and he'll talk about getting born and all the things that have to happen. Then he talks about nursing and all those miracles, and then he starts taking us by the hand through a person's development and what a nace this is and what a nace that is and how parents take care of a baby and how a baby, and then there is a paragraph about childhood diseases. What's the purpose? The baby doesn't know what's going on. The baby can't think, the baby can't do tshuva, the baby didn't do anything wrong. Like, why are they, that he does talk about here in Shara Bechina, because he says there's a very wonderful, there's a very wonderful reason for it. There's a very good reason for it. Hashem is being meitiv. Hashem is doing the child a favor. And I don't want to give away. We're going to learn about it. Now I just want to go quickly through, again, what he describes in a few words as a nes. So we start off with the sperm fertilizing the ovum. And it takes place in the fallopian tube. I'm skipping so much because it has to travel. And many sperm, you laugh when you read these words, because many sperm must cooperate to penetrate the thick protective shell-like barrier that surrounds the ovum. The first sperm that penetrates fully into the egg donates its genetic material, the DNA. The egg then polarizes, repelling any additional sperm.
What is cooperating? How does that work? I never heard that one. Because I know that if they're all, only one is able to get in, and they're all floating through.
I don't know. Maybe they don't bump into each other. The resulting combination is called a zygote. Z-Y-G-O-T-E. A new, and now this is the name, a new and genetically unique human organism. And that was just created. And there's an arichus here about before fertilization, each ovum contains a complete human genome, X, Y, blah, blah, blah. The embryonic period in humans begins with fertilization and continues until the end of the 10th week of gestation. And again, it talks about how it travels down the fallopian tube. It starts off as a single cell zygote, and then divides several times to form a ball of cells called a morula, M-O-R-U-L-A. Further cellular division is accompanied, you read these things, is accompanied by the formation of a small cavity between the cells. This stage is called the blastocyst. Mm-hmm. Up to this point, there's no growth in the overall size of the embryo, as it is confined. You know, he talks about that the fetus is protected. There's protection at this stage too, as it is confined within a glycoprotein shell known as the zona pellucida. So each division produces successively smaller cells. The blastocyst reaches the uterus at roughly the fifth day after fertilization. Then there's a whole bunch of stuff that takes place. I can't pronounce the words. But the bottom line is the embryo becomes embedded in the endometrium in a process called implantation. In most successful pregnancies, the embryo implants 8 to 10 days after ovulation. The embryo, the extraembryonic membranes, and the placenta are collectively referred to as the conceptus, the products of conception. Then it goes through the weeks here. And like, what happens? Like, after 1 week, you have formed a new human organism, and then there's a whole bunch of stuff. The embryo hatches from its protein shell and performs implantation into the endometrial lining of the mother's uterus. At week 4, or week 8 to 14 days from fertilization, trophoblast cells surrounding the embryonic cells proliferate. Who told them to do this? That's what the Chavis Halovis wants us to think about. Who told them to do this? And invade deeper into the uterine lining, they will eventually form the placenta and embryonic membranes. I'm not reading everything. 15 to 21 days after fertilization, just one of the things that happens, a neural groove, which is the future spinal cord, forms over the notochord with a brain bulge at one end. Because the brain is very connected to the spine. That's neuromeres appear. Somites, the divisions of future vertebrae, form. Primitive heart tube is forming. Vasculature begins to develop in the embryonic disc. I don't know what that means. Now we're getting Leberdick. Now it's getting Leberdick, a month after fertilization. The embryo measures 4 millimeters, begins to curve into a C shape. The heart bulges, further develops, and begins to beat in a regular rhythm. This is a month. Branchial arches, grooves which will form the structures of the face and neck form. The neural tube closes, the ears begin to form, arm buds and a tail are visible. Yikes. Pulmonary primordium, the first traits of the lung appear. The first traits of the liver appear. The mouth, some word I can't pronounce, membrane ruptures. This is the future mouth. Cystic diverticulum, which will become the gallbladder, and the pancreas appear. The rectal and urinary passageways become separated. Anterior and posterior horns differentiate in the spinal cord. The spleen appears. Okay, now we're weiter, a week later. The embryo now measures 9 millimeters. Lens pits and optic cups form the start of the developing eye. Nasal pits form. The brain divides into 5 vesicles. Leg buds form and hands form as flat paddles on the arms. Rudimentary blood moves through primitive vessels connected to the yolk sac. The precursor of the definitive kidney starts to develop. The initial stomach differentiation begins. We talked about that it's a nace that the baby is not rejected by the mother from her immune system. I'll skip over that. We're now 42 days after fertilization.
Is this one is considered halacha, a living being?
The word living at 40 days. At 40 days, it's lungs begin to form, the brains begin to develop, arms and legs have lengthened, with foot and hand areas distinguishable. The gonadal ridge becomes to be perceptible. Anybody?
Gonads are fertility.
The lymphatic system begins to develop, and main development of external genitalia starts. Okay, now we're 49 days from fertilization. There's a fetal heart tone. The sound of the heartbeat can be heard using Doppler. Nipples and hair follicles begin to form. Location of the elbows and toes are visible. Spontaneous limb movements may be detected by ultrasound. All essential organs have now begun. The vitelline duct closes. Don't know what that is. Now we're holding. And now the Chavis Aldovis mentions how it develops. You need the development of the circulatory system, heart development, development of the digestive system, tooth development, endocrine system, development of the integumentary system, development of the lymphatic system, development of the muscular system, development of the nervous system, development of the urinary and reproductive systems, development of the gonads, development of the respiratory system.
But there's no teeth yet.
What?
There's no teeth.
Is there
tooth development. Labordic, 9 weeks old. 9 weeks old. Embryo measures 30 to 80 millimeters. You know what we're talking about? 1.2 to 3.2 inches. That's what we're talking about. And everything's there. Intestines rotate. Facial features continue to develop. The eyelids are more developed. The external features of the ear begin to take their final shape. If you're going to have big ears, it's now. The head comprises nearly half the fetus's size. The face is well formed. The eyelids close and will not reopen until about the 28th week. I don't know why. Tooth buds, which will form the baby teeth, appear. This is at 9 weeks old. The limbs are long and thin. The fetus can make a fist with its fingers. Genitals appear well differentiated. Red blood cells are produced in the liver. The body's starting to work. 13 weeks old, a fine hair called lanugo develops on the head. Fetal skin is almost transparent. More muscle tissue and bones have developed. The fetus makes active movements. I guess that's kicking. Sucking motions are made with the mouth. Meconium is made in the intestinal tract.
Meconium. What is that? That's the waste material that, God forbid, when the baby's born.
Right.
They have to be ingested.
The liver and pancreas produce fluid secretions. And from week 13, sex prediction by ultrasound is almost 100% accurate. Okay, now we're 18 weeks.
Are they seeing? Did you say that they open their eyes and see?
No, they close their eyes.
Yeah, but you said at one point
they
see. Until
28.
Doesn't say they see. I don't know. It says. The eyelids close and will not reopen till the 28th week. That's at week 9.
I don't think they're seeing before then.
I don't know if they're seeing anything. We're up to 16 weeks now. Lanugo covers the entire body. Eyebrows and eyelashes appear. The fetus is now 8 inches long. Nails appear on the fingers and toes. The fetus is more active with increased muscle development. And you know, the Chavis HaLovitz uses this as it's growing. Quickening usually occurs. The mother and others can feel the fetus moving. The fetal heartbeat can be heard with the stethoscope. 20 weeks old. Fetus is now 28 centimeters. Fetus weighs about 925 grams. Eyebrows and eyelashes are well formed. All of the eye components have developed. The fetus has a hand and startle reflex. Footprints and fingerprints are forming. And air sacs are forming in the lungs. And who's doing this? 24 weeks old. The fetus is now 15 inches long. The fetus weighs 1.2 kilograms, 2 pounds, 11 ounces. The brain develops rapidly. The nervous system develops enough to control some body functions. The eyelids open and close. The cochlea are now developed.
The ear.
And will continue to develop until 18 months after birth. The respiratory system, while immature, has developed to the point where gas exchange is possible. Okay, 30 weeks old. The fetus reaches a length of 15 to 17 inches. It weighs around 3 pounds. Amount of body fat rapidly increases. Rhythmic breathing occurs, but full lungs are not fully mature. Rhythmic breathing movements occur. Thalamic brain connections, which mediate sensory input, form. Bones are fully developed but are soft and pliable. The fetus begins storing a lot of iron, calcium, and phosphorus. By the way, there's gestational age and embryonic age. I'm not going into that. I'm not 100% sure what it means. He said before the favorite what it is. Okay, we're at 32 weeks. The fetus reaches a length of 16 to 19 inches. The fetus weighs around 5 pounds to 6 pounds. Lanugo begins to disappear.
That's the hairs.
Fingernails reach the end of the fingertips. A baby born at 36 weeks has a high chance of survival, but may require medical intervention. Okay, now we're 33 to 37 weeks old. The fetus is considered full term at the end of the 39th week of gestational age, which we're holding by now. The lanugo is gone, except on the upper arms and shoulders. Fingernails extend beyond the fingertips.
But 9 months is 36 weeks, so we're just saying 36.
There's gestational age and embryonic age. I skipped over that.
Gestational age is the age when the last time the woman
had a period. That's how the doctors count, from the period, last period, not from the date of conception.
The date of conception is a little difficult.
Small breast buds are present on both sexes. Head hair is now coarse and thick. And now, okay, now, just during pregnancy, the fetal circulatory system works differently than after birth. The fetus is connected by an umbilical cord to the placenta, the organ that develops and implants in the mother's uterus during pregnancy. Through the blood vessels in the umbilical cord, the fetus receives all the necessary nutrition, oxygen, and life support from the mother through the placenta. Waste products and carbon dioxide from the fetus are sent back through the umbilical cord and placenta to the mother's circulation to be eliminated. Okay, then the Chavis HaLovitz talks about the miracle of the birth process. Like, how did the baby get out of it? It's in a tight spot. So there's the stages of labor. There's early labor, active labor, second stage of labor, third stage, and the contractions, you know about that, and that's your body starts getting ready to expel the baby, and that's how it works. And here, this is more like just telling women what to do and to rest. Early labor ends when the cervix is 4 centimeters dilated and your progress starts to accelerate. It's not clear how long this takes. It could take 6 to 12 hours. Mm-hmm. It could take longer. It could take shorter. happened. The first baby, not the first baby. Then they give you coping tips here. We're not doing that now. First stage, active labor. This is when things really get rolling. Your contractions become increasingly intense, more frequent, longer, and stronger. You won't be able to talk anymore through them. The dilated, get dilated to 10 centimeters. Towards the end of active labor, your baby may begin to descend, although he might have started to descend earlier, or he might not start till the next stage. It doesn't say anything then.
You should have been asked before you start.
As a general rule, okay, then it talks about this, and then active labor. Transition, it's called, to the second stage of labor. This is the most intense part of labor. The baby has now descended somewhat into your pelvis. This is when you begin feeling rectal pressure, as if you have to move your bowels. Some women begin to bear down spontaneously to push. Mm-hmm. All sorts of things are happening to the body. Once your cervix is fully dilated, the final descent and birth of your baby is happening, the work of the second stage of labor. At the beginning of the second stage, your contractions may be a little further apart, giving you the chance for much needed rest between them. Many women find their contractions in the second stage easier to handle than the contractions in active labor, because bearing down offers some relief. As your uterus contracts, this is all Neeson, it exerts pressure on your baby, moving it down to the birth canal. So if everything's going well, you want to take it slowly and let your uterus do the work until you feel the urge to push. Waiting a while may leave you less exhausted. Okay, we're not here, we're birthing class here. In many hospitals, it's still routine practice to coach women to push with each contraction in an effort to speed up the baby's descent. And you have to decide if you want to do that or if you just, okay. With each contraction, the force of the uterus combined with the force of your abdominal muscles, if you're pushing, exerts pressure on the baby to continue to move down the birth canal. When a contraction is over and your uterus is relaxed, your baby's head will recede slightly, sort of two steps forward, one step back kind of progression. After a time, it begins to bulge with each push, your baby's scalp will become visible, a very exciting moment, a sign that the end is in sight. You can ask for a mirror to see, maybe you want to touch down and touch the top of his head. Okay, then it describes the pushing.
Isn't pressure tremendous on a baby, though?
No.
On his head?
No, I don't know.
Really
no, because the skin of the mother is becoming very, very flexible and it's opening up.
No, but you also said the other day that the head bones of a baby are soft and flexible at that point.
Yeah.
So they can smash in, you know. Sometimes they come out looking all funny, the heads. Like
yeah,
heads.
Well, that's what we're going to... Okay, after your baby's head emerges, the doctor... I'm skipping things that we don't have to say. Suction the mouth and nose, feel around the neck for the umbilical cord. Okay, once your baby hits the atmosphere, it needs to be kept warm. Okay. Now we'll review everything that changes at birth. In fetal, review of fetal circulation. Well, we don't have to do this. Review of respiratory changes and other changes at birth. As soon as the baby is born, a whole bunch of stuff is not needed anymore, which I can't pronounce. Obviously, all the umbilical vessels, ductus, arteriosus ductus, venosus, and the foramen ovum. Sphincter, I don't know, all this stuff is not needed. Aeration of the lungs at birth is associated with a dramatic fall in pulmonary vascular resistance due to lung expansion, a marked increase in pulmonary blood flow, a progressive thinning of the walls of the pulmonary arteries due to stretching as the lungs increase in size with the first few breaths. The first breath, the pulmonary alveoli open up, pressure in the pulmonary tissue open up. No, with the first breath, the pulmonary alveoli open up, pressure in the pulmonary tissues decreases, blood from the right heart rushes to fill the alveolar capillaries, pressure in the right side of the heart decreases, pressure in the left side of the heart increases. As more blood is returned from the well-vascularized pulmonary tissue via the pulmonary veins to the left atrium. These are breathing. Resulting circulatory changes include blood pressure is now high in the aorta and systematic circulation is well established. Control of circulation is a reflex function regulated peripherally by, I don't, you know, a whole bunch of words, but this is control of circulation. And
it's really
yeah,
it's like split seconds
how your baby begins to breathe. While the baby is being born, everybody's focused on the star as the grand entrance is accomplished, but its first sounds are eagerly anticipated. A loud and lusty cry is proof that the baby has made the transition to its new environment safely.
I wonder why some cry more than others.
In order to understand the miraculous changes that... can anybody hear what the... In order to understand the miraculous changes that take place in the first few moments after birth... So again, it goes through the way fetal blood circulation works. There are two critical differences between fetal circulation and newborn circulation. The first difference is that oxygen is delivered to the fetus across the placenta into the umbilical cord. The oxygenated blood is returned to the fetus's heart and then pumped out to the rest of the body. The second difference is that the fetal lungs do not serve a function and receive only a small fraction of the circulation. Why? As compared to the circulation requirements after birth. These important differences are reflected in structural differences within the heart itself during the course of gestation. Although the fetal heart contains the same four chambers and blood vessels that the child or adult heart contains, the chambers and blood vessels relate to each other in different ways. For example, the two upper chambers of the heart, the left and right atria, are open to each other through a special passage during gestation. Additionally, although a large amount of blood is pumped out to the lungs through the pulmonary artery, a lot of it is diverted to the main circulation by way of a special channel before it gets to the lungs. These structural differences ensure that very little oxygen is wasted by pumping it through the fetal lungs, which are virtually useless, and in fact are collapsed within the chest. Okay. Okay, now there's a whole page here. Changes in the newborn at birth. So lungs and circulatory system, we read. Temperature regulation. A developing baby produces about twice as much heat as an adult. That heat,
twice as much.
A developing baby produces about twice as much heat as an adult. That heat dissipates as blood flows into the mother's circulation via the placenta and is cooled. A small amount of heat is removed through the developing baby's skin, the amniotic fluid, and the uterine wall.
You mean the baby's born hot?
After delivery, the newborn begins to lose heat. Listen to this sentence. Receptors on the baby's skin send messages to the brain that the baby's body is cold. The baby's body then creates heat by shivering and by burning stores of brown fat, a type of fat found only in fetuses and newborns. Liver. In the fetus, the liver acts as a storage site for sugar and iron. Sugar meaning glycogen.
Glycogen.
When the baby is born, the liver has to, all of a sudden, it produces substances that help the blood to clot. It begins breaking down waste products such as excess red blood cells. It produces a protein that helps break down bilirubin. And that's where jaundice comes from. It doesn't do it quickly enough. Okay. Next paper. The first moments after birth are monumental for your baby. As soon as the child leaves the womb, they need to switch over to adjust to life independently from the mother's body, to begin functioning separately from the placenta, cord, and uterus. As the baby is born, they leave an environment that has been completely life-sustaining, providing oxygen, nutrition, and warmth through the pregnancy, labor, and birth. At birth, the baby undergoes some amazing physiological adjustments to enable them to adapt to life alone in the outside world, such as the wonders of new life. No one's doing tshuva. The major adaptions is blood circulation, starting to breathe air, and body temperature regulation. And then it goes through all of that. I don't. You could ask me. I'll send it to you. Okay. Then there's the gastrointestinal system. Doesn't fully function until after birth. In late pregnancy, the fetus produces a tarry green or black waste substance called meconium. Meconium is the medical term for the newborn infant's first stools. Meconium is composed of amniotic fluid, mucus, lanugo, bile, and cells that have been shed from the skin and intestinal tract. In some cases, the baby passes stools while still inside the uterus. Urinary system. The developing baby's kidneys begin producing urine by 9 to 12 weeks into the pregnancy. After birth, the newborn will usually urinate within the first 24 hours of life. The kidneys become able to maintain the body's fluid and electrolyte balance. The rate at which blood filters through the kidneys increases sharply after birth and in the first 2 weeks of life. Still, it takes some time for the kidneys to get up to speed. Newborns have less ability to remove excess salt or to concentrate or dilute the urine compared to adults. This ability improves over time. The immune system. The immune system begins to develop in the fetus and continues to mature through the child's first years of life. The womb is a relatively sterile environment, but as soon as the baby is born, he or she is exposed to a variety of bacteria and other potential disease-causing substances. Although newborn infants are more vulnerable to infection, their immune system can and does respond to infectious organisms. Newborns carry some antibodies from their mother, which provide protection against infection. Breastfeeding also helps improve a newborn's immunity. Skin. Newborn skin will vary depending on the length of the pregnancy. Premature infants have thin, transparent skin. The skin of a full-term infant is thicker. Then it talks about characteristics. The mouth, what the mouth does in utero, and what happens when... How does the fetus breathe inside the mother's womb? It doesn't. That's the answer. Yeah. Head shape. In order for a baby to be able to travel to the birth canal, the head must be small enough and flexible enough to fit. Fortunately.
That's why the baby's head is short.
Fortunately, the brain is only a fraction of its adult size at birth. The bones that surround it are also able to mold into different positions. This explains why most babies that have been resting low in their mother's pelvis have long, pointy heads just after birth. While the head must be extremely moldable, this is Denise. It must be very sturdy. The skull is responsible for protecting the brain beneath it. It must be strong enough to endure bumps and bonks during delivery and thereafter. And in order to grow and develop complex language and thought, the brain and its surrounding skull must be able to expand. Therefore, both the brain and its protective shell are designed, and again, you have to laugh, are designed to change shape and grow over time. For something so hard to the touch, the bony skull is amazingly malleable. Mm-hmm. Head growth is greatest the first year of life. As the skull grows, it changes shape. Therefore, when a baby is placed in various positions over and over again, the pressure on one particular part of the skull can cause flattening of that area. While children and adults have relatively fixed head shapes, babies do not. The range of skull shapes and the speed at which the skull changes shapes are remarkable. Then he talks about pointy heads, soft spots. Okay, then there's the third stage of labor, which is the uterus begins to contract again, and you have to expel the placenta. You have to deliver the placenta. After you deliver the placenta, the uterus should contract and get very firm. These are all nisim. You'll feel it on the top of your belly. You can't give a blah, blah, blah. Okay. I mean, then it talks about. Now we talk about, okay, we're following the Chavis Lovavis now. So the baby's born. And now we talk about breastfeeding, which Chavis Lovavis, again, in a few words, says, like, that's amazing. That's unbelievable. And, and he says if the hole, I don't know, must have a name, the hole, would be a little bigger, the baby would choke. And if it would be a little smaller, it doesn't have the kolach to, it's just exactly the right size. That's what the mother says that. But he didn't, or maybe he didn't know, I don't know. I don't know what he knew, what he didn't know. It talks about how it's the absolute optimal diet for a new baby. I mean, some people who can't nurse shouldn't feel bad, but just this year, it's 2012, the American Academy of Pediatrics reaffirmed its stance that breastfeeding is a natural and beneficial source of nutrition and provides the healthiest start for infants. The Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics recently confirmed that exclusive breastfeeding provides optimal nutrition and health protection for the first 6 months of life, and breastfeeding with complementary foods from 6 months to 12 months in age is the ideal feeding pattern for infants. Okay, this is interesting. I wonder why we need a Shahar HaBechina person. Exclusive breastfeeding means the baby receives all her nutritional needs from breastfeeding for the first 6 months of life, with the exception of vitamin D.
And that's what we're all deficient in.
I know. Nutrition experts recommend all breastfed infants receive 400 IU of vitamin D within a few days of life and throughout childhood. Why is mom's milk so special? It's uniquely tailored to meet her nutritional needs. It is always ready at just the right temperature when it's hungry. It stays safe and sterile in convenient containers her mom can take anywhere. Nursing helps promote the proper alignment of the jaw and teeth, as child development experts. The composition of the mother's milk changes as the baby develops. And breast milk contains substances that help protect her from ear infections, tummy upsets, other childhood maladies. Breastfed babies are less likely to be overweight or to have high blood pressure when they grow up. The mother benefits greatly from breastfeeding as well. She burns around 500 additional calories each day to produce milk for the infant. That can help her return to her pre-pregnancy weight.
Now, I had a friend who didn't breastfeed, and because she held the baby like this, you see, if you hold the baby in the same position all the time, he didn't learn how to turn his neck. You know, it was always the same way. If you breastfeed, sort of one side, the other side, and they learn to work the neck muscles. And this baby's head and neck muscles, because of being in the same position and having a bottle, she had to take him for physiotherapy.
Listen to what it's described. Nature has designed breastfeeding as the perfect system to ease the transition. Because the mother continues to process food that she eats into its nutrient components, but now these components are transported into the fluid produced by the breasts. Not only does breast milk contain all the necessary nutrients, in other words, it's still like feeding the baby when it's a fetus, but it's just happening in a different way. So it eases the transition, because it's still like eating the baby, it's still, the mother's still feeding the baby. Then there's a description. Okay, maybe we'll
it also provides.
We'll stop here. Maybe we'll see next time.
Contraceptive.
Well, that's not the breastfeeding doesn't do that. The breastfeeding does that, though.
That's the most of the time. My friend went back for a 6 week checkup.
You're there again.
Yeah.
I.